Hey, what's good? This is Brother Mose, Underground Footy Podcast. Just letting you know, if you want to support what we're doing here, you can just hit us up on pgyoungboys.com. Anyway, let's get down to the show. Welcome back to the Underground Footy Podcast. I told you I was going to try to keep this thing going this time around, you know, and I'm really blessed to have with me today Hugh Roberts from Monterey Bay FC in the USL Championship. He's been in the game for a minute, beautiful game. So what I want to do is we're just going to dig in, find out about his pathway, and also talk about some of the things that he's working on, because he's also an activist. And make sure you give us the name of your podcast, because I want everyone to check that out as well, because I know you got a lot to say. We're not gonna use a whole lot of time, so I end up with a 2-3-piece podcast this time. What I've decided to do moving forward is, for my guests that if we don't get everything in, we'll just do it again. So so for today, I just want to say, Mr. Roberts, welcome to the Underground Footy Podcast, and let's step on the subway.
Yes, sir, my man. I appreciate you for having me. Looking forward to it.
All right, all right. Hey, listen, if you could just tell us about, you know, because my hashtag that I always put on everything is either Rep PG County or Rep DMV, because what I want to do is just let the guys from the area know that the pathways are varied, right? The level in this area is very high, and it's been very high for a long time, you know? So tell me, how did you get into the game? What were your influences, and how did you end up playing the game?
Yeah, my man. So my pops is Jamaican. Pops played as well pretty much his whole life too. I pretty much was his ball boy since I could run pretty much. But he went to NC State University, North Carolina State, played all 4 years there, played semi-pro a little bit, still plays to this day. So I pretty much was always around him by his hip. How I got started though, honestly, I'm from MoCo, not PG, but Montgomery County, but I got PG ties a little bit. Used to play ball up in Laurel Boys and Girls Club a little bit, play basketball up in Blair, all those schools out there a little bit too. But I just got started playing rec ball, MSIs, Montgomery County's Recreational Soccer League. Started, if you know MSI, really there's like 7-8 divisions, and you know, just work your way up and down as MSI Classic, just recreational leagues. Probably did that all the way until like 5th, 6th grade, and then went to Potomac Academy, which is now Bethesda Soccer Club, but back then it was Potomac Soccer Club before they went to Academy. That was my first leap to travel soccer before, like I said, I was just playing rec. And it was kind of a big change for me, but thankfully I had a good coach and good guidance under my under my feet as well, so it got me in a good place. From there, the club transitioned to Potomac Academy, my junior and senior year of high school. And from there, that was when you go to showcase a little bit, understand a little bit more of the technical side of the game. But a lot of changes happened within our coaching staff. So when I first joined the club, it was a Jamaican coach that actually brought me on. Still the only Black coach I've had to this day when I was in middle school. And then from there, they actually got rid of him within a year and then made him either lose his job or just fired him or whatever. But they brought in a Georgetown University staff and just completely changed ship. And honestly, a lot of kids, including myself, struggled just adapting to a new coach and playing with the coach that kind of just didn't let you play like yourself and just play within a system too. So just understanding, you know, the roles of adapting to playing within the system.
Okay, what I want to do, I want to dig back a little bit, because you came across all of these things, but I want to know the triggers, right? So in other words, you were playing MSI. Now you mentioned the different levels. Now this wasn't like promotion, relegation, just like you got too good for one level, or you got really good and then you went to the next level, or
how? Nah, it's promotion, relegation. So if you finish top two in division four, you move up division three. You finish top two that year, you move up division two. Like it was, yeah, just like that. So every year in rec soccer, you're pretty much fighting hard to, you know, work your way up. to Division
Wow.
One and MSI
Did
Classics
you
at the time.
have targets? Did you like when you were in the lower division, was did you know there was some guys playing at a higher division? You're like, we're gonna get them one day, or
Oh yeah, definitely. We started in Division Five. We always wanted to make up to Division One, and I actually had some friends that are on some elite teams, so I just knew about the club system and travel soccer. The MSC Dragons were big at the time as well too, which is more of your international group. So I had a lot of friends on the other side. So I was like, man, how do I get to that talented team? How do I keep climbing?
So who were your coaches? Let's give them their flowers, you know. The ones that stick in your head. Now I know you mentioned the gentleman who lost his job, but how did that team get put together? How did you guys get together? Was it just you
Honestly,
signed up and they threw you in together, or did you kind of know where you were signing up?
so I was playing rec that whole time, and I honestly, because that coach was Jamaican and my father was Jamaican, he had three other boys on that team that were Jamaican. My father ran into some other Jamaican guys, and they're like, "Hey, this my son plays for a Jamaican coach. You should come try out for this team." So I was fortunate enough that my dad made some contacts with Jamaican friends, and that blessed me to bring me over to this Jamaican coach, who kind of just transformed my game a little bit.
Okay. And so then when you stepped out of that, and what was it like going from that system to going into, you said Potomac Academy, which became Bethesda, right?
It was, I'm not gonna lie, it was tough, and I'll never forget as a kid. I knew I was playing rec ball, and I knew it was very easy. I'm not gonna lie. I was playing the center back when I first started. I just dribbled through everybody. I was playing as a striker, I just dribbled through everybody. But I knew when I made the transition out, I actually had to play real soccer. And when I say real soccer, I mean I watched soccer on TV all the time. I knew about playing out the back in possession, but I knew I didn't do that in rec soccer. So this was the first time where I actually had to play two touches, had to lay the ball off on the one touch, had to play the ball in the middle, had to actually know how to play within a 4-4-2 formation. Really, just in rec soccer before at the time was just go out there and play and have fun. So now I had to understand the more tactical side, the technical side of soccer, and work on, even just the simple volleys left and right. I never really did that in soccer and rec soccer until I got into the club system.
Okay. And then as you moved up,
Lay
you
down. Sorry, that was my dog's going crazy.
I know I had to lock mine up
Yeah, I
because
can
they
see
were
that.
coming here and start talking. But so now you're leaving that, you're going into Potomac Academy. Now all of a sudden, are you traveling more?
Traveling more, yep, to going to bigger showcases now in Florida and Texas. Up and went to one out in California as well too. You're going now to New York playing against the Gauchos, some of the Westchester teams, some of the city teams. You're going as far south as North Carolina as well too, to play like Castle, some of those elite teams down there. And then when I'm going to tournaments and showcases now, instead of before when I was in middle school playing club soccer, just you're going to, win a trophy, those kind of things. But now at your games, college coaches sitting on the sidelines, taking notes on you, asking your coach about you. You might get emails now from college teams. So really things kind of turned up a little bit.
So at that point in time, were you thinking about I'm going to be a pro, or were you just like, I just want to get to college and keep playing?
Honestly, my whole motive from when I started was to go pro. I had some vision in my head when I was younger, just kind of being on a big stage in front of a big crowd playing and, just doing this passion and doing what I love. At the time back then, 10 years, I feel like I missed the times 10 years, because back then the focus from my generation was college, college, college. Everyone, the pathway was to go to college first. So yes, my mindset was to go to college to get me to pro, but that was the way because there was no USL that was intact. There's no MLS Next. The only outlet was, MLS or the MLS reserve teams or the national teams. So the best route for you to get an opportunity was to go to college. So everyone's focus, and my focus at the time, was to go to a top D1 school and hopefully get my opportunity to go to the next level.
So how did you get from now when you played high school ball as well or only academy?
Back then, we could play high school ball. So I played high school ball at Good Counsel, which I feel for these kids now, because it was awesome back then. You wear your jersey during school, tell everybody come to your game, pull up, you put on for your people at school, and then you go to academy practice at night too. So yeah, it changed when I was in college, but back then we could, and that was one of the best things that I enjoyed.
Okay. So now you're rolling along. How did you get your college situation put away? What was that like? Because a
Yeah,
lot of the kids that I talk to now, that's kind of the stage they're in. And You know, it's a stressful time, you know. Knowing the percentages of people that play, how many want to play, and now you have divisions, you know, you have divisions and NAIA, you got JUCO, you got 3-2-1, and I would say that it seems to be there's a lot of pressure to these guys to I want to be D1.
Yes, I
And
would.
I will say that being D1 may not be the answer because times have changed. I mean, I've seen times
That's
change
exactly
just
what I was
over the
going to say.
last few years with the
Right.
extra COVID year, with the amount of players being imported, you know, brought in from other countries that are usually a little older than
Right.
the guys that are, you know, so it's not it's rare to see a true freshman getting major minutes in, you know, in the top D1 programs. And I mean, I can't speak on all of them, but it just seems with the transfer portal and all of that, it's gotten really competitive and very, like I said, stressful. So what was you, how did you get introduced to, I mean, well, you can talk about where you played and all of that.
Yeah, so I was actually a striker my whole life going into it. So at the academy at the time, I was playing striker and had some good colleges hit me up. So how the process works, you have, I think your junior year, they can start phone calling you. So around that time, I was getting some phone calls from schools, but nothing, everything was just phone call wise. And you do your official visits and visit senior year of high school. So in the beginning, it's more so just weighing my options. Didn't really want to commit anywhere early. It was full of excitement. So enjoy the time, fellas. Definitely. You know, you want to weigh your options, but we have a lot of power within ourselves too. And that's what I realized, you know, as soon as I turned pro, I'll touch on that later time. But after that, I started doing my official visit senior year, but not just the visits. I also went to like the school's camps. I went to, you know, Georgetown University summer camp. I went to Maryland summer camp. I went to North Carolina Chapel Hill summer camp, Northeastern summer camp, Providence. I went to camps, not just to go to the school, but to put myself into more exposure, because when you go to one school, there's a bunch of other schools watching and all these coaches talk. So even though you don't, might not get picked up by Georgetown, you know, George Mason might be there, George Washington might be there as well too, and they might like you as well. So you just never know. But the good thing is you're exposing yourself, and that's also for friends that you meet there too. People are going to remember you if you stand out, and they're going to look for you as you go down in your career too. So, you know, everyone's route is different though. I will definitely say, more of my time, as I said before, the emphasis was college D1, but now times have changed, as you touched on as well too. Now, if I was to look back on it, the biggest thing is playing time. And when I say that, how important that is, because now kids are going to, you know, a top JUCO and they're scoring 30, 40 goals. And because of that, they're putting, you know, good highlight tapes on, and they're getting opportunities in MLS camps now. They're going to D2, D3, and they're scoring goals or having good accolades as a defender. You're going to get an opportunity still if you came from at least a good background, or you're at least going to get a USL opportunity too, because the USL is very strong too, and the outlets change a lot. There's kids leaving from high school who are going to the USL and developing too, which was never an opportunity for me when I was in high school as well. So there's so many different routes, and I know MLS Next threw a lot of confusion out there too, because everyone's thinking you have to go the MLS Next route. But I will say a lot of MLS teams are looking in the USL too, and the USL's players are also going overseas as well too. So don't think as well if you're gonna touch the USL, it's like a Debbie Downer comparison to MLS Next. I promise you, there's a lot of USL is like a grown man's league, and if you can stand out and do,
I've seen it, yeah.
do your thing in that league, you can have some success in the MLS. So definitely keep going, because you never know which route you will end up best for you. And the biggest thing is you want playing time.
Well, what are your thoughts on, like, obviously, I got to know you through Maggie and Tim, and she shared some good things on a previous podcast, if any of you guys want to go back and look at it. But, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that, like, when you talk about USL, now you have MLS Next Pro. There's also things behind machinations behind the scenes, meaning USL teams are very anxious to be able to sell players and collect fees, and it doesn't matter to them whether it's overseas, MLS, whatever, because of the fact that in the US system, obviously, everything's frozen in place. So for a USL team, they can't be promoted to being an MLS team at this point in time. Not saying it'll never happen, but at this point in time. So I've heard of kids that say, look, I want to stay out of that system. And then the USLs come in and they grab some pretty talented players on the younger levels as well. It just seems that it's good that there's multiple. Now, when you played how long in college?
All 4 years.
All 4 years. So when you were coming up on that last year, did you know you were going to have opportunities to keep playing, or were you kind of like, uh-oh, what's next? Or how did you?
That's a good question. My mindset was, so I go into college freshman year as a striker, and I do okay, play as a wing and a striker. And then my sophomore year, they're like, hey, we have no defenders. How about you give it a try? You play center back. So that was my transition. I played the center back in the sixth my sophomore year. And then junior, senior year, I had a conversation with my coach. He was like, if you're thinking about the next level, where do you want to lock in your position for good for your last 2 years of your college career? I was like, okay, I want to play center back. So junior year was okay, but senior year, I was actually nine. So every year they come out with the MLS draft board, and I was actually number 99 out of 100 on the draft board. So I was like, okay. I was getting a little accolades throughout my college career. I was like second team all Big South, second team all CAA. So I was like, okay, a little accolades, but the USL was just getting started. I was really just hoping for just a camp and a trial. I didn't really have the biggest interest from any MLS clubs, honestly. It was more so I had a good background in my academy. My coach was Greg Gondrulis, was on the US national board. So I knew I had good connections that he can help me out with. And he said to us seniors, do well this year, and I hope you guys, for your future endeavors in terms of going pro. So we had a very good senior year. My senior year, we went undefeated in the A-10s, won the A-10 championship, went to the NCAA tournament to the second round, and it was a great season. I was captain of the team, led the team to the second best defensive record within our conference as well too. And after that, of course, every kid thinks, yes, have a great year. I'm gonna go get drafted, those kind of things. And
Right.
that's where the confusion kind of comes in. And or for a kid, that's where their heart might get broken when they realize the reality kind of hits, But for me, I knew I had to start somewhere, and I was just more so happy just to start somewhere. And I'm someone who's determined I can just make my way for myself anywhere. So after that, graduated. Kid, you're gonna realize it's yourself too. A lot of these coaches, you do your time for them, and then that's that kind of thing. So we did our time for our 4 years, and we had our senior year meeting, and coach said, well, appreciate you guys. Thank you for everything you guys have done. If you go to any combine, just let me know. And that was that. That was my senior year, end of the year meeting, literally 5 minutes.
Right.
So now I'm on my own and have to figure out what I'm gonna do. I drive to Florida for this InfoSport combine, which is kind of just a waste of money. They really just took a bunch of our money and just said the college coaches or pro coaches would be there, which they were, but they didn't give us any evaluation. They didn't hit us up after the camp. So from there, I went to three USL trials, one in Rochester Rhinos, got cut after that weekend. One, and then I went 8 weeks in a row while I'm doing school to Harrisburg, which is 2 hours from my university, every Monday night for 8 weeks straight. And after the 8th week, I'm like, listen, I'm coming from college, I have no money. I'm pretty sure you guys have a decision on me or not. And they're like, thank you for your time. That was that. And my last kind of go around was Richmond Kickers down the road from my school, 2 hours away. And I was like, okay, this is my last opportunity, but I'm still going to try and make a name for myself because this is my dreams and goals. Yes, I went down and got my contract, but it wasn't something that was set in stone either. I went down there for the open tryout. After you have a good weekend, they invite you to preseason, which is another 2 week trial to see how you can manage with the actual team. Then after 2 weeks, I was like, okay, coach, I'm commuting from college. Like, what's going on? And he was like, all right, we would love to offer you your first professional contract. And I wouldn't say the rest was history, but it was still a lot of struggle within that. But that was my first opportunity, and that's how I got started.
It's funny because the Richmond Kickers has a pretty rich history of ballers coming through there. I know several, guys that have come through, friends of mine, and I know the Dwayne De Rosario was there as well. And I know the Etiennes were there. I mean, I don't know exactly where to. You're a little younger than them, so they were history at that point, I'm sure. But it just seems like the Richmond Kickers have given some opportunities. I know another young man who actually just signed there from an MLS academy, actually. He decided he wanted to go there. So I would say it seems like they've actually really launched some folks. So at that time, they were USL what?
Championship.
They were USL Championship at that time, even.
They were the top division. It wasn't called USL Championship, it was just called USL Pro. But they and it was all under there wasn't enough teams for two divisions yet. League One came around 2018, but it was just one league, and Richmond Kickers were at the top league. They're actually I was very fortunate, very, very fortunate my rookie season to go to the Kickers. I was the only rookie on the team. They were last the year before they just won the USL, and they brought the same core the my rookie year. So we went on a 25 game unbeaten streak. I was also blessed to be with a veteran team with all guys 27 and older. So that really helped me. They groomed me. They educated me on the game. And when I say I didn't know soccer till I came to Richmond. And just in terms of college ball, which is why it's an animal, because a lot of these teams don't play good soccer. A lot of these teams play direct and they just want results and they just want to make themselves look good for their school, but not necessarily, playing out the back, playing two touches, actually giving you technical abilities to make yourself get better. It's just long balls. And that's how we played at George Mason. It's not a disrespectful thing. That's how we won, but it's kind of just long balls and fight, scrappy, and work hard. I get to Richmond, where Richmond likes to play good ball too. It's not like they're a long ball team. So we're playing out the back now. I have to take two touches, one touch even for a layoff. I have to play long balls. I have to learn how to break a line in the pass from a center back. And I was a striker my whole life, and I knew nothing about the game of as a center back. I thought it was hot-ish. I get there and I guess I was favored a little because I had a little athleticism. So the coach in the beginning was just giving me free range, putting me with the first team, putting me with the starters. Man, the ball would come to me. I'd take two touches forward to pluck the ball for me in 2 seconds. And that happened for a month straight. And people don't realize that you turn pro is cool, but you're isolated from your friends, you're isolated from your family. I was the only one out of nine of us seniors to go pro. So all my boys are partying out of school while I'm here struggling with my day-to-day life, and they think things are cool because I'm a pro, but it's really I was struggling mentally. So I went home. I'll never forget. I just sat on my couch and watching TV. I'm like, I'm not a bum. I'm not this crappy player. Like, what is going on, Hugh? So I really just reflected. I was like, how about instead of taking two touches when the ball comes across, I just take one touch. And that just was like a eureka moment. And I get to train the next day, start playing on one touch, start playing on more two touches. Coach Lee Cowshaw at the time, he's not the Richmond coach now, but Lee Cowshaw, who's like the Hall of Famer for the Kickers. He was a hard ass on you, but you need some coaches to light fire on you in a good way. And I respond good, I guess, because of basketball as well. When coaches are on you, kind of respond in a good way, being like, okay, coach, I understand. Boom, I'll get better. And that's just how it was. One touch, two touch, play out, check your shoulder left, play the goalkeeper. Just a lot of little movements I had to learn. And Richmond really grew me. And that's why I was very, very fortunate to be at a good club, a good experienced club that, gave me my foundation.
And those veterans, they were able to once they gave you your respect, they wanted to help you.
Right. I'm talking about my center back. I'm 21. My center back partner's 32. William Yambi's top five legend in the USL. But he put us, and another thing too is also goes to your character too. And don't get me wrong, it's not like they just came up to me because I am a good dude and I'm a humble player. But there's players who came in that weren't humbled, same age as me, and they didn't give them any, critiques or any information to help them because of their attitude and how, much of an ego they had. But
So
me,
you would, I just want to put it in a container for my kids and for the parents. You come in humble because even if you're talented, you have a lot to learn.
I'm telling you right now too. I'm glad you touched on that. There is so many. This is my 10th year now. I can tell you there's been at least 100 plus players that I know who don't make it because of their attitude and their ego, not because they're not talented, not because of this and that. They talk back to the coaches. They give them, trash talk. Coach says okay and doesn't play you anymore. And then they go talk to other coaches, and the coach will call them and be like, "Hey, how's that player in practice?" Now that's what coaches are talking about now. It's not necessarily the game because they can watch you on ESPN Plus. They'll call your coach. Maybe my coach in Monterey called two coaches back. So my Charlotte coach and the Pittsburgh coach was like, "Hey, how is Hugh off the field? How is Hugh during practice?" Because those things matter now.
Well, I
So
mean, with you being a veteran, they want to know that you can teach in addition to ball, right?
right, exactly. And they kind of want to know how you are in the locker room too, because those hot-headed guys, those egotistical guys, those prideful guys, they ruin locker rooms, and then those are the seasons that you you kind of are struggling a lot. And that's what happens on, and I've only, in my 10 years, I haven't made the playoffs twice. And both of those years were the times where everyone had a big head and everyone thought they were hot-ish, and we were fighting and talking trash to each other every day. And it was a bad locker room. And because you had toxic players, it was a toxic locker room. So a lot of coaches now, which is important, where, let's say in Monterey, for example, our coach literally recruited good players first. Yes, your talent mattered, but if he heard that you were not a good locker room player, he didn't want you, no matter how
good citizens. I've seen that in the past, where a coach has maybe exempted a really good player, but they would actually ask around to, I mean, even parents, players, you know, just like, hey, what is this person going to destroy my squad? You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, obviously, like you said, video can say you're talented. But what people have to say, and it's not one person, because one person could not like you. But, you know, when they take a consensus, normally you're not going to get shafted if you actually are trying to be a team player and you're saying positive things as opposed to just negative constructive criticisms, you know, and you're willing to say, hey, great try, you know, right, I see what you were trying to do there, you know, things like that.
Even in my bad too goes a long way.
the little hit on the chest. Yep, like, yep,
yep. Seriously.
And I've seen like, you know, the strikers or the wingers, when someone tries to get them a ball and they maybe, the ball might not have been great, but they like the idea. They throw the thumbs up.
Yeah,
to them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Keep coming with it. Don't.
That's what I do too on the field. The thumbs up, and that really creates a lot of bond and trust, even for the guys who are the most prideful guys. My bad, it even drops their walls and like, okay, you know what? I like this guy. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna keep finding him, kind of thing. And it really goes a long way with that.
All right. Well, I mean, as a center back, you touch the ball a lot. All right. I mean, center backs, goalkeepers, especially if you're in a build out type team. So I would assume that you have a lot of power over who gets the ball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can play your wing backs, you can play your sixes or whatever. And
start the offense.
And I think that a lot of young players don't realize that because it's a 11 person game, you could not look as good as you would like just because every time someone touches the ball, they have an option with what they're going to do with it. Mm-hmm. They could play you, or they could play another open player. Mm-hmm. You know, that happened to you a few times a game, and you didn't have the best game, the game you could have had, I would suppose. Right. All right. So you go from the kicker. How did you move out of that situation? Because, I mean, I know where you ended up. I'm just trying to get all your stops in between.
Yeah. So I was there for 3 years. After my first year, rookie year, I signed a 1 year guaranteed and a 2 year option guarantee. So most teams in the U.S. will have an option year, really based on how your performance is each season. I wouldn't even say how your best performance is almost a guarantee to bring you back. No, I'll touch on this when I get to Pittsburgh, but sometimes even your best performance, since it's a business, they're like, you cost too much, I'm sorry, boom, you're gone, kind of thing. So
you can outplay your contract.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So I get to my freshman year, or my rookie year, I played close to 20 games out of 34, including Open Cup, and I did decent enough where they brought me back. Picked up my option, which means I was guaranteed to come back for two more years. Second year, I was first time starting for the majority of the season. We get to playoffs. We lose in the second round, but I had a decent year for myself as well. Like I said, I only missed probably like five or six games now at that point, my sophomore year. Then my third year in the league, I played every single game, played every single minute. We went on a 25-game unbeaten streak, finished top three.
So you've been able to stay healthy too. I didn't even touch upon the injury side and the luck it takes to get through, because as we can see with even certain pros, you get a reputation of being fragile, it might not be your fault, but it doesn't matter because people are talking about their money.
Exactly. And when they realize you're an injury prone player, your money gets cut short. They might not even offer your contract. They might say, come on trial because of that. And that's I'm glad you asked that question too. So I've been very blessed to have only, I guess, one major injury, and that was my What year was that? I was when I was in Richmond. That was, I think, my second or third year in the league. I had a high ankle sprain. It was my second year in the league. Had a high ankle sprain. I was just doing well for myself. Like I said, I played a decent amount my second year in the league. Just running. Someone gave me a bad pass. Stepped on the field wrong. Twisted my ankle bad, and I was out for 2 weeks. It was almost at the point where that year, coach was actually trying to make me play on a bad ankle, which is, I guess, is a fortunate thing for me. But ended up having to be out for a little bit. But that was really the only major injury
And
until I got to college.
how did you mentally deal with, like, does that stuff, when that happens, it's almost like being sick, right? You're like, will I ever be back? You know, and do I, and then they're putting the pressure on you to return to play. And you're like, you know, if you return and you have a bad performance anywhere, you're still hurt. You're in the same boat as if you didn't play at all, except for now you can't go anywhere else, I
And you almost
suppose.
hurt yourself and lose your starting spot sometimes too. I would say in those situations, one, to stay patient within yourself. I know you're rushing to get back. I know you're anxious. Maybe if you're a starter, it sucks. You're just itching to get back. Stay patient because your body and your longevity of your career is the most important thing. If you were a starter, so and so lost your spot, but just trust the process in terms of you're good enough to get back and you will deserve and earn your spot back and you will get to where you need to be. I was fortunate that it was only 2 weeks, but I was also just kind of patient and just just kind of worked hard and did my rehab
And I
after.
will tell you, being if that was the only length of time and you're calling that a major injury, you've been a very blessed man with the game.
I had a worse ankle injury in Charlotte, but I played through that, and I shouldn't have played through that. I actually should have listened to my own words. I'm saying you people right now. I should have sat out. I was probably should have sat out for 2 months, but I was just so determined to play and play. I almost played on one leg for 3 months, but I got through those times. But I'll touch on that in a little bit. So my third year was blessed, like I said, to play every single minute. Finished first team all league and was defensive player of the year finalist my third year in the league. And my whole dreams was always to get to the MLS. It's always, even to this day, it's really just to get a preseason, not even asking for a contract, just a preseason opportunity. So I knew Richmond was just my kind of staple to get to my next opportunity. So at the time I was out of contract, they kind of knew it as well too. I just did well for myself. Just like I said, I was first team all league. And that's when I decided to go to Philadelphia. My whole goal with that was trying to get a preseason opportunity, like I just said, and they just kept telling me, if you sign for the second team of Bethlehem Steel, sign for the USL team. We promise you get a MLS opportunity. Just sign, sign, sign. We got you. Trust me. I'm like, all right, here we go. So I signed. They made me come out January 5th, very early. I'm one of seven guys training there very early. Long story short, they just put me through the rope and didn't even invite me to Florida with them for a combine opportunity, which I wanted and I fought for, and I felt like I deserved throughout my career, just an opportunity, and that didn't happen. So you have to deal with that as a young player, and kind of how you deal with that. For me personally, at the end of the day, I kind of just put my head down and get to work, and I'm just like, I'm gonna show them who I really am, kind of thing. I was actually fortunate where Josh Yarrow, I don't know, I'm sure you heard of Josh Yarrow. Josh Yarrow at the time, a week into their preseason, hurt his shoulder. So they called me and invited me down to Florida with them, flew me down there. So I went down there for the second week of preseason in Tampa, Florida with the Union. Started in two games, did well for myself, had an assist. Felt like I should have been just personally invited back. And it was just a business at the end of the day. They decided to go with future U.S. men's national team players and Mark McKenzie and Austin Trusty, who was there with me at the time. I didn't know was how much of a business it was within the MLS, so now I really understand. So since I wasn't in the academy and I wasn't on the first team, how the second teams usually work is really almost just like kind of like a reserve team where the first team guys come down every weekend for minutes, the academy guys come up every weekend for minutes, and those guys who are non-academy, non-MLS are kind of just roster fillers. So even though I was first team all league the year before, defender of the year finalist, I actually didn't play the first five games of the season because Ernie Stewart, who's now the U.S. men's national team sporting director, was sporting director for Union at the time. He wanted Mark McKenzie, Austin Trusty to play first and foremost. So I couldn't say anything, couldn't do anything. These 18-year-old boys came immediately and played the first five games of the season, which is a month plus because you only play on Saturdays, and that's 5 weeks right there. So it was tough for me, just playing every single minute the year before and now coming to a brand new role. And it took time for me as a young player, honestly, to get out of that funk mentally. And I still worked hard, but it was really kind of tough because there with the two teams, you train every day, Monday through Friday. with your regular team, but then Friday, Saturday comes around, they bring MLS guys down, they bring Academy guys down, and then boom, they're in the starting lineup for Saturday. So it almost didn't matter how well you trained because Ernie Stewart, the guys at the top, had their guys ready they wanted to see. So long story short, with that whole environment, I still made the most out of it. Out of 34 games, I played probably 22. And I ended up helping them go to their first ever playoff appearance in their club's history. And so, like I said, my end of the day for me, it was just, okay, I didn't get the opportunity. Then I'm going to get the opportunity in the middle of the year, or I'm going to get the opportunity at the end of the year. At some point, I'm going to get this opportunity. And that's kind of just how I had some success within that season. Not just myself, but there's a bunch of players who should have gotten an opportunity at the time to go with the first team, but nobody did. But like I just said, it's just a whole business that taught me a lot within that game in Philly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how, one of my questions is, obviously it's a business, right? From the beginning, the first time you're a pro to where you're at now, how did you get your advisors, your agents, who were you talking to? And what suggestions do you make to young players about representation and you know, what you should look for?
Yeah, representation definitely matters. So at the time, I guess even to this day, my biggest guidance is my father. And I know not everyone might not have their father figure around, but you have to have someone at least close to you that can guide you aside from your agents, can guide you aside from your friends, guide you aside, because some agency, a lot of agencies are looking for the dollar. And if you don't perform each and every year, they're just going to put you on the back burner. They're not even going to call you and talk to you anymore. For me, when I first started out, it was a local guy from Baltimore who actually knew from another friend who was local in the area, stuck with a local guy from the DMV. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a big agency as well, too. So he actually had a lot of time to focus. Let's say he only had a 10 to 20 player roster size. So he had a lot of time to focus on me. He didn't have the most contacts, so I guess that reflected within me early on in my career. He could only get me to certain opportunities because he only had a limited bandwidth himself, and that right. mattered as well, too. So again, it's a lot of give and take, because if you do go to a big agency, if you're not a big name, they're going to kind of put you at the bottom of the roster, and they might not give you a lot of time. I might put you kind of to the second-tier teams when you might deserve a first-tier team, or you can go to an agency that might have a smaller roster that will give you a lot of time and energy, but might not have, you know, those connections too. So it's definitely, you want to do your research within agencies as well, to ask your friends and colleagues that you know who are working on them. Hey, how do you like so-and-so? How's their connections? Pretty much everyone's information is online as well, to see how they've gotten other players to other big name teams. That will tell you how big their agency is as well, too. Mm-hmm. It's important. Like I said earlier, we have a lot of control on this as well, too, because we're the hottest asset that these agents want as well, too. So end of the day, you have to ball out and perform so they can come to you. But when they do come and approach you, don't just jump at the first one. Weigh your options. So after my about sixth season with this guy, I realized, he told me in a conversation one day, he said this indirectly. He didn't even realize he said this on the phone, but he was like, you know, Hugh, at this point, it's my fifth year in the career. At this point, I don't think MLS is, you know, a realistic opportunity. I think you need to go down to maybe like League One NPSL. And I'm like, man, this guy really just told me that, and I'm getting ready to go into my sixth year. And well, clearly, and again, I'm a humble player, so I didn't rash at him. I didn't cuss at him. I didn't do anything. I realized at that moment that we have different ideas and visions. And a lot of times, fellas, a lot of people have different visions than what you have, because no one has what you have in your mind. No one understands what you're thinking. So I realized he didn't really align with what I had in my vision. So it's no hard feelings. I kind of cut ties with him. And I was actually fortunate, and that's when I made my transition to Maggie, doing some research, and she reached out to me herself too, and I asked some people around, talked to my father as well too, before switching over agencies to her.
Okay, and let's give her agency a shout out.
Yes, yes.
So,
yes.
Trinity 3.
Trinity, yep.
Yeah.
Trinity 3 agency, I give them a big shout out, because, you know, through her connection, she blessed me with a great opportunity in Charlotte, blessed me with the opportunity in Monterey, but not only that, she's, you know, in constant communication with me. Since she doesn't have the biggest roster size, she constantly calls me all the time, which you will know your value with how much communication your agency gives you. If they really value highly, they'll contact you almost every other week, maybe at least once a month, check up on you off the field, not even ask you questions sometimes within your season, but just making sure you're good off the field, because mentally, if you're not focused off the field, you can't even perform. So it's important for these agencies to know and connect with you outside of the game as well too. And that's what she does for me. It's almost like an auntie figure for me as well too, where she fights for me on my behalf. She tells me her conversations, but I also hear from other clubs like, man, your agent's been very persistent. She fought for you and got you X, Y, and Z. Or man, oh yeah, I really know Maggie. She really fights hard for her people. So I hear those things outside before she even came to me and worked hard for me. So I really do appreciate her in a lot of ways, because I do hear how she fights for me within the MLS, within, you know, certain top clubs, but they, you know, they decide to go other routes because they just want European players or such and such things. But she stays in communication with me, and she's definitely working hard to get me to where I want to be.
Yeah, and truthfully, that's how I found out about you, was because I followed her on social media amongst, you know, a lot of folks. And I was like, man, she seems really amped on this dude. Let me ask about him. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, obviously, like, I'm learning the history of the DMV ballers, because I have three kids and they go from 20 down to, well, now one just turned 17. So I kind of knew, like, maybe 2001s and down. But then I start hearing about all these other guys. I mean, one of my first podcasts was with a gentleman named Joe Jow. And, you know, and he started telling me about, like, just giving me history. I mean, who are some of the guys that you played with that people need to know, those that their names need to ring out? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, Joe Jow was my same year, 92. We definitely battled all high school. We knew each other from early on. People Doué, big name.
Yeah, that's a name that comes up quite a bit. Yeah. Yep.
Captain of Loudoun FC at the time. Julio Arjona, a big name back when we were growing up as well too. Was on the U-17 national team, played with me at George Mason, went to West Virginia, went to Clarksburg High School in Montgomery County. Ethan White went to University of Maryland, local kid in the area as well too. Rodney Wallace went to Bullis High School.
Yeah, I know that name.
Puerto Rican national team, went to the World Cup. What's my boy's name at NYC?
Wait, wasn't Rodney? Rodney was doing the MLS, the GA Cup. He was announcing the GA Cup, right? Is that the same Rodney Wallace?
He's older than me. I think he retired a couple of years. He's like
30. Yeah. He was doing announcing. He was
okay. Yeah. I didn't know he was at the GA Cup, but yeah, that was him.
Yeah. He was on YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I follow him too as well.
DMV produces big quality players. London Woodbury played center back of Maryland. Grew up in the DMV area too. Trying to think of some few.
Wait, Gucci is from the area too.
Gucci on Wayu, yep, played with him in Philly as well too. Henry played at DeMatha. DeMatha produced a lot of good players as well too. Marcus Douglas went to Gonzaga. So yeah, my class.
Chris Stewie Adson was there too.
Yep. Can't forget about him. Yeah, a lot of good talent out there.
Yeah,
I have to think about it some more.
Did you mess with Corey Hayes?
Corey Hayes. I played for the Baltimore Bays. So I played for the Baltimore Bays my freshman year of college, won the U-19 national championship with them. Uh-huh. Met Ja'Cory out there, Gamble, who plays for Loudoun right now, Loudoun FC too. A couple of those boys who are at the team at the time. My boy who plays for San Jose Earthquakes right now, Jeremy Mbuze. I used to train with him in high school. We, at the Maryland Sportsplex all off season, we used to train heavy together too. Same with what's my guy's name at NYCFC from the DMV area too.
we'll get it.
I'll do back. It'll come to me on top of my head randomly, but yeah, mm-hmm. Town area, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess for me, it's just I like to get this information out so that. Because, I mean, it's a lot of guys that are in the mix right now. Some of them are feeling kind of down. You know, some of them maybe should be feeling a little more humble than they actually are. And, you know, something that I always used to tell my guys, I said, you know, until someone is signing a check with your name on it, you you need to just keep grinding. And then, of course, when they do put your name on a check, you still got to keep grinding. But, you know, I just find that some guys kind of buy into the hype. You know, obviously social media plays a big part and I mean, it builds careers and it sinks careers. So you need to just keep your head down and grind, you know, in my opinion.
Don't let that social media thing fool you either. It's going to get you opportunity. But if this is what you really want to do, just know it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be ugly, full of tears because of contractual issues, because of business you think you deserve, X, Y, and Z. So-and-so got an opportunity because it before you, and you better. All them things are going to happen, even as you keep climbing every year. But if this is what you want, trust me, just keep going. You're going to get rewarded in this process. And I've been rewarded each and every year. And that's kind of the reason why I keep going. People ask me, do I still have this drive? Do I still have this hunger? And I really do, because just I've been blessed where I came to Monterey. I didn't even know I was going to be the captain of the team, but here I am going into preseason.
Oh yeah. And congratulations. I'm thinking you got the captaincy this year. They opened the club with you as the captain.
Right.
You
which
know,
is a powerful statement. And I couldn't have imagined that. Right. And so when I got that, and then going into this coming year again with the armband, I'm like, okay, another sign for me where I got to keep going. You never know what's going to happen, but it's another sign from the man above that, you know, these things are happening for a reason.
I'm gonna have to link up with you and get one of those jerseys. I'll get you a PG Young Boys hoodie though.
Yes, sir. We'll trade that. I got it. Need the hoodie.
All right. Well, look, man, I want to thank you for your time. You know, I know you're with you in preseason now, huh?
Nah, I'm in off season, actually leaving a week and a half though, so getting ready. But I've been training for the last couple months and staying in shape because I'm trying to get ready and come flying as soon as I get there.
Hey, come fit, right?
Exactly. You always want to come fit. Never go there to get fit, because that first day your coaches are looking at you for your starting spot and judging you how you worked hard all off season. Trust me, don't let them say, "Oh, it doesn't matter, you work hard." And the first day you come there, they see you lazy, you're out of shape. All right, this boy has a lethargic, you know, work ethic. He didn't do anything all offseason, and they're going to put you on the back burner already.
All right. Well, look, I want to thank you for joining the Underground Footy Podcast and spending the time talking to myself and all the folks that listen. And if someone wants to follow you on social media, give me all the handles.
Yes, sir. So me personally, I'm Superhuman on Instagram and Superhuman on Twitter as well, too. It's all one word. It's a pun, H-U-G-H, man. But I also have my brand and business called Backyard Footy. It's all one word, and it's a podcast as well. I'm also
I'm gonna cram those jokers. And how far back do I need to go?
We're Backyard Footy?
Yeah. How many episodes I need to go back?
Yeah, I'm 51 in deep now, starting.
Whoa!
Yeah,
because I've definitely seen you as one of the recommended podcasts.
All right,
I've listened to a couple. I didn't know you at the time, mm-hmm. but I appreciate you taking that time to do that as well.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And I was just gonna say the other thing that I want to let the kids know is that your image is what you got. And if you carry yourself the right way, NIL, whether you call it marketing, whatever it is, can be a whole nother revenue stream for you. So be careful about the stuff that you're putting on the internet. Yeah. You know, think twice before you hit send. You know, if you're mad about something, maybe give it 24 hours.
Think twice. Don't even tweet them things sometimes subtly. Subtweeting all them things, it's really not. You see what's going on nowadays, they even bring up old tweets. It really ain't even worth it a lot of the times. Really, for me in social media, I just keep it as my brand, my image, as that, but I don't even let people know too much of me personally, because that's when people love to, you know, judge and all those kind of things.
Well, like I said, I mean, it's bold that you have a podcast, because I know you address social issues and things like that, and I've done the same. You know, with this one, we didn't go deep into that, and perhaps we will at some point. But I wanted people to get to know Superhuman. You know what I mean?
Sir.
And again, thank you. So we'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Anytime. You know, I got you.